Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
I'm Macca.
Oh, I'm Macca, and that's Tess. Hello, Tess.
Thanks. Macca, let's introduce our guests. We are actually going to completely shift gear. We're going to be talking about the Queer Scientists Initiative, which is holding a full-day symposium on STEM. So we want to unpack all of that and work out what that means and what STEM even means, because many of our listeners may not know what that is.
I thought it was something on a flower.
But before we do that, let's introduce our guests. We've got three people in the studio. We've got David Balding, Professor David Balding. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
We've also got Matthew Coleman. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
Matthew, you're going to have to speak right up against that.
Good morning.
That's exactly right. And we've got Dr. Sarah Gordon. Good morning, Sarah Gordon.
Good morning.
Now, I'm going to ask each of you to tell us a little bit, you know, in a couple of bullet points only, what you do. Okay, let's start with you, Matthew.
For sure, yeah. So I'm a research assistant at the University of Melbourne, and I work on epilepsy and speech disorders and finding genetic causes for those. So that's kind of my work.
And fantastic. Sarah. And, you know, because our listeners can't see you, you're about 26?
25, thank
there
you.
There we go. Sarah, and yourself, what do you do?
So I'm a laboratory head at the Fleury Institute of Neuroscience and
Mental
Health.
A great place, that one.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
In those gorgeous new buildings too.
It's a beautiful place to work. Mm. I work on brain disorders of childhood.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, how interesting is that? And what about yourself, Professor Balding?
Well, I started off in mathematics and then I moved into genetics, and now I kind of straddle the two. I'm half 50% in biology department and 50% in mathematics, and I do a lot of things on with genetics, DNA profile evidence and genetic diseases, human history, all kinds of different things, dog genetics, crop genetics, various different things.
And where do you do that from, David?
At University of Melbourne.
Yeah. Okay, lovely. Any particular department?
Well, we've got a new unit called Melbourne Integrative Genomics, which kind of gets together people like me that are very good on the sort of computational mathematical side and then working on these genomics questions in basic science and in medical areas, a whole range of things. Yeah.
Hmm, how cool. So, yeah. Queers and science, why does this beast exist and who is it?
So, Queers in Science is a not-for-profit initiative. So, our aim is to foster and champion inclusion of LGBTQIA plus individuals within STEM. So, STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Maths and Medicine. So, we're across all the sciences. Actually, David's a great example of that, because David crosses pretty much all of the sciences, really. So, so we're aiming to try and improve workplace culture and improve the experience for queer people within the sciences.
So how large is this organisation of yours? I mean, how many members do you have, can you say?
Yeah, we're a relatively new organisation. We started last year. We're now up to about 300 members, which is fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, it shows a real need for this within the community. So we're very proud to be launching Australia's very first symposium for queer researchers within the STEM fields next Friday.
Wow, wow. So perhaps a question to you, David, if you might like to start. Mm-hmm. What are some of the issues for queer scientists?
Well, I think it's just the kind of visibility kind of thing, because the kind of queer nature doesn't really impinge on the science very much, and so it can be quite invisible. In fact, when I did a little bit of look up of how many famous queer scientists there were, and there's actually not very many on the record. It's a bit surprising. Alan Turing's the big famous one, of course. There are not too many others, and I think it's got a lot to do with this visibility, and so we want to make sure, retain younger people, show them that there are, you know, good career paths and successful queer people in the sciences.
Yeah. It's about promoting role models. So you can't, if you can't see it, you can't be it.
Yes.
So that's what we're all about, trying to show young queer people that there are queer scientists and you can be one too.
And Sarah, you're about 24?
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I'm 37.
Oh, right. I think I've just made a friend.
Yeah. I'm going to have a great day now, thanks.
Okay, I suppose the point that I was trying to make is that you're actually both quite young, really.
Yeah.
And obviously, Matthew, you're even younger. So there's quite a cross-section of people as part of your organisation. It's not your old grey-haired professors.
No. We're really trying to support people at all points within their career. Because that's one of the main problems for LGBTQIA people within science is that they drop out much earlier within their careers. So there's a greater dropout for students. There are fewer queer students who enter science as degrees. They tend to drop out more. And then at every point along the professional pathway, you've got higher dropout rates. And that's a real problem.
And is there an experience of discrimination for queer scientists? Do you have much evidence of that?
I mean, there is, yeah. We can all tell you stories about, you know, times that we've been discriminated against in our workplaces.
Please do.
Occurred to me in Edinburgh, where I did my postdoctoral studies there. And I went along to a Christmas party, was feeling very, very fine in my new gear. Rocked up there and one of my colleagues looked at me, laughed and said, "What are you, a lesbian?" Because I was wearing pants. So it's a really pervasive, cis-heteronormative kind of culture that can exist in science industry, and we're just trying to break that down, really. So, you know, everybody's got stories like that, and we want to make sure that those stories don't continue within science.
Of course. Matthew, what about you? Do you have any stories you could share with us?
Yeah, for sure. The main thing is that a lot of people have these stories. It's about everyone who kind of experiences day-to-day kind of discrimination or just even not being recognised within STEM workplaces. So for us, our major thing is to encourage STEM workplaces to build an environment of inclusion and really vocally state their support of LGBTQIA+ people. And we've shown that diversity, like research has shown that diversity in workplaces is really important to improving those workplaces. And 40% of people aren't out in workplaces, in STEM workplaces, because it's a traditionally cis heteronormative field. And that's a major problem. So even in my own workplace, I know a number of people who have come to me and said they felt uncomfortable coming out. And that's because I'm the only person they know in STEM who is queer.
I would have thought, and we'll get to Professor Balding in a sec, you know, you work in fields that are based on facts, that are based on, you know, things that are provable, things that are sustainable, things you can sustain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, there are people that work in those areas that actually, you know, would have these views, you know, so they're actually dismissing the science.
Completely agree.
And, you know, going for, you know, one of the many franchises that are available on the other side in terms of belief.
It's actually really hard to unpack why that may be the case. We are a very educated group of people. So you would think that we, as a field, would be kind of a bit better at this. But I think it's also a very traditional
field.
But
you're also human beings.
We are. We're made up of
And you're made
of
up of culture and background and history and tradition and families and all those other things.
That's one of the complications is that...
but you're human beings.
Yeah, exactly. So if we could just get rid of the humans, we'd be fine. Because we go across... it's a very international discipline. So you have many different cultures kind of coming together, and they bring, you know, their own belief systems, and what you need to do, I guess, is make workplaces inclusive of everyone. So that includes, you know, different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, as well as being more inclusive for, you know, queer people. So
now, before we take a very quick break, David, do you have an example that you could share with us of, well, of the experience of discrimination?
You didn't ask me my age. I've had more experience than the other two.
Yes. Well, you're my age, you see.
And I definitely would, you know, while all these things are true, just emphasize the positive things. I mean, you know, in my 30 or so year career, things have improved so much, you know, and also my experience generally has been pretty good. Of course, there are some bad examples. My partner's in the performing arts and music and theatre, and scientists love meeting people from the arts, and yeah, you know, totally. So he comes along to scientific conferences and meets people, and he's also very interested in science, which helps a lot, and so I've had generally good experiences, although of course, you know, the sort of bad experiences you've had also exist.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass, Professor David Balding, Matthew Coleman and Dr. Sarah Gordon. What are we talking about, Tass?
We're talking about queers in science.
Queers in science, not queer science. I reckon we should have our own.
We should do the science as well.
Yeah. We should have our own. Now, I'm interested, in the last government, did we have a Minister for Science federally?
No.
But we do have one now. Is that right? Is that right, David?
Yes. I heard Karen Andrews speak in Cambry quite recently, and she was pretty impressive.
So how have we ended up with a science minister again? I thought they didn't believe in science.
In Canberra. Stay quiet about that one.
Yeah. there are definitely a lot of problems, but she was pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. Why is it important to have a science minister? You know, we know in the states, in each of the states that, you know, different ministers pay a lot of attention to the curriculum and the learning institutions in each area. But why do we need a science minister? I mean, I know why we need one, but why do we need one?
I think it's just really important to get the real information out there. So in order to have good policy, you need to have scientists informing that policy. So that's how we get good climate change policy. That's how we get good health science policy. So I think that's why it's really important.
What an interesting concept.
Yes.
Tass. Don't you think that's interesting, Colin, that you should be informed by the facts?
Evidence-based. Well, you know my view, Macca. There's many ways to skin a cat. Yeah. And evidence is only one source of input into public policy making.
Yeah, it's the only way you
unfortunately.
Get
mean, it's important, but it's not the only contributing factor that helps to shape public policy. I mean, you have to add to that things like personal experience.
Absolutely.
I often give the example, you know, we had a national campaign against drugs in Australia in 1984, I think, when our then Prime Minister discovered that his own daughter had a heroin addiction issue. So it became very personal. It doesn't matter how much evidence we provided about we need to deal with this issue. Once it became personal, that was a motivating factor. But there are many other contributing factors as well. It's not just personal experience, but I do believe science should be a major contributing factor.
Yes, and maybe we need to be better at getting out there and getting the word out. So maybe we should personalise science a little bit for everyone.
I think the other important factor is timing.
Yeah.
Timing. So, you know, it's about getting the right time. Anyway, we're not here to talk about public policy making. Tell us about this STEM Day and what's that about?
Yeah.
So this is Australia's very first symposium for queer researchers within the STEM fields. So STEM is science, technology, engineering, maths and medicine. The aim of LGBT STEM Day and the symposium is to promote visibility of queer scientists, to provide networking opportunities for new and emerging queer scientists so that they can find role models and mentors.
I'm getting a picture here.
Yes. And also to help increase education in the types of career pathways that you know, young queer people can undertake. So we've got some amazing researchers who will be presenting at the symposium next week. We have astrophysicists. We've got people who are leading the way on climate change and trying to work out how we're going to adapt to climate change in Australia. We've got people who are working on childhood diseases and using stem cells to model diseases of aging like Alzheimer's disease. And we've got researchers who are trying to make travel safer for all Australians. So these are queer scientists who are trying to make the world better for everyone. And we really want to celebrate that and showcase that. So that's really the aim of the symposium next week.
So when is it on? How many people are coming? Where will it be? Give us some of those details.
All right. So it's next Friday, the 5th of July, and it will be hosted at the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health. So just up here in Parkville. That'll be from 10 a.m. till around 5:30, and then we'll have a poster session at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute of Medical Research. And it's featuring all career paths of scientists. So once again, we've got scientists from all around. We've got UTS in Sydney. We've got University of Wollongong. We've got...
So you're actually a national organisation, not a Victorian organisation.
That is the aim, yes. So yeah. We started as a Melbourne-based initiative last year, and our aim is to aim nationwide. But yeah, we're currently growing, and this is one of the first major steps. And yeah, so we've got a lot of amazing speakers visiting from all around Australia.
So if there happens to be a queer scientist out there listening to us, how can they hook into your organisation?
For sure, they can check out our website, which is queersinscience.org.au, or have a look for us on Facebook or Twitter. So we're available on both of those and Instagram. All of those link, and they have our details.
Now, I've got a question, and all of you can answer. Are queer people, is there a scientific basis for our sexuality?
That is a very, very hot topic. So a lot of
Do you
people,
talk about that?
No, for the most part we address, we want to promote people who are working in science. Yep. So that may be science of...
So you're not looking at scientific causes?
No, absolutely, because one of my major issues with looking for scientific causes of these things implies that there's something wrong to begin with.
Yes, yes.
And that something is different and that we're looking for it. But that's not what
we're
about.
Well, we can look for a scientific cause for being straight.
No, Matthew, well said. That was very well said.
But the other thing is, I mean, we've been digging into a lot very recently, right down to, you know, the genetics and how it connects with various outcomes. And the answer is nearly always it's much more complicated than we thought, you know. Mm. So I'm sure there's a scientific basis. There are somewhere, but it's going to be a long time before this is well understood. And we shouldn't kind of get ahead ourselves in terms of that understanding.
Mm. We're Sarah. Far more similar than we are different. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing, I think, when it comes to the genetics of humanity.
Yeah. So where would you like to, you know, let's roll forward 5 years. How would you like, you know, queers working in the STEM area, where would you like them to be? Where would you like them to, you know, what's on the wish list? What are the things that you really would like to, you know, start to see happening?
That's a fantastic question. I guess in 5 years we would love it if everybody can show up to their workplaces being their authentic selves. So you should feel as comfortable bringing your same-sex partner as anybody else would be bringing, you know, their partner, I guess. So I think that if we... Science is enriched by diversity. So in order to do the very best science, the most innovative science, we need the most diverse thoughts at the table, the most diverse thinking at the table, I guess. So I think that if we all embrace the differences that occur in science and try to bring the best minds to the table, then science will prosper. So I guess that's what I'd like to see in 5 years' time, that... that it's almost something that we don't really have to talk about, that I don't have to come here and tell you why we need inclusion in science. It'll already be happening.
And David, what about for you on the wish list, David?
Well, I think that's pretty much it. We want queer people to be more successful and more visible and just normal. Yes.
I've been asked to ask you that as new and younger students enter science as a profession, do you think acceptance of LGBTI people will change the current culture?
I think it already is. I certainly find within my own laboratory, I've got a number of queer students, and they change the way that I run my laboratory. They're changing the way that the Florey as an institute runs. So we're really driving change from that grassroots kind of level, I guess. So,
and are you doing advocacy work? Like, are you approaching absolutely. The big research institutions and saying, show us your inclusion policies?
Yes. That's one of the main, I guess, pillars of Queers in Science, is that we're trying to drive policy change within institutes to make them all inclusive.
Fantastic. Now, look, I've got to... sorry, Matthew, you were about to say something.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say one of the reasons we actually started was during the marriage debate, a lot of the discussions that fell around at the time I was at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, and a number of us banded together and actually approached all of the institutes and the universities to encourage them to put out a statement of diversity in support of marriage equality, which we thought was really important for showing their workers this, so their own employees as well as the public, how supportive they are and how important it is for diversity and how there is...
And did the MCRI do that?
Absolutely. So most of the organisations, most of the institutes around were happy to say, yes, we support, or
that's fantastic,
we support our employees, or provide additional resources for employees who are dealing with issues, that kind of stuff. It was really fantastic.
Fantastic. Now, one final question. So you are going to award the Scott Johnson Award.
Yes.
Who can talk to us about who Scott Johnson was and what this award is about?
Yeah, sure. So Scott Johnson was a brilliant mathematician and PhD student at the ANU, so Australian National University, in 1988. Unfortunately, he was killed in a gay hate crime at a Sydney beat when he was visiting in 1988. At the time, he was only 27. He was visiting his partner in Sydney, and it was initially ruled a suicide. It took 30 years and 3 coronial inquests before they managed to get a gay hate crime ruling, and his family really had to push for that. Continually, that was rejected as a possible outcome, despite so many things showing otherwise. And one of the most amazing things was that he was posthumously awarded his PhD in 1993, and that was because of his family's work and a lot of advocacy support workers. So really, we want to honour his memory, and with his family's permission, we've named this Scott Johnson Memorial Award for contribution to LGBTQIA+ advocacy in STEM.
I feel quite emotional listening to that story. I think that's a really lovely way to honour his work and his history and his legacy.
You know, I want to say, I think the work you guys are doing is really important, but it's actually courageous. And, you know, to stand up for what you are and who you are and for the community in which we all live, I think is, you know, this is really important stuff. I thank you for it. I think, you know, all change is difficult, but, you know, you've started this journey, you're continuing this journey, you know, you're advocating, you're being visible. Thank you. It's really... really important, and it means a lot. It'll mean a lot to your students, but it means a lot to our community. So thank you.
Thanks
very much.
So the award, what happens with the award? What's the award for specifically?
So it's specifically for people who've contributed to LGBTQIA+ advocacy within the field of STEM. And our nominations have been open, and they actually closed yesterday, and we've had a look through, and we have some fantastic nominees, and it's going to make the decision really difficult this year, but hopefully we'll be able to award this
every year. That's a great problem
year.
To have, though, isn't
Imagine
it?
That Absolutely. You've got a group of people to choose from for doing this for our community in science. What a fantastic...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, what a difficult choice, but how as someone would say, how great is this? That's the science.
And all honours to Scott Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah. No, well done. After the big STEM day, what's your next big thing?
We're just going to try and get bigger and better. So our aim is to grow a national network for queer people in science across all of the science fields. So that's our next big job, following on from LGBT STEM Day next week.
Great. Any final words from anybody?
If you haven't registered and you're listening, just because I'm such a lovely person, I'll keep registrations open for another day. Please sign up, come along. You can listen to some great science. Even if you're not a a scientist yourself, if you're not in the STEM fields, but you want to come and be inspired by the great work that's being done by leading queer scientists and allies, please come along. We'd love to have you there.
Excellent. Excellent. David?
Well, not much more to add, except I'm going to be one of the speakers, so you'll get to hear more of me. Yeah, do come along next Friday. I mean, I think one of the great things is that you get such a wide spectrum of all things going on in science, and there's really some, as Sarah was saying, some really fantastic, interesting range of things of what's going on currently to make the world a better place. A lot of it done by queer people.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for coming into the studio this morning. It's been really interesting to
thank you for having
the
us.
Work that you're doing.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
How inspirational is that, Tass?
Oh, Macca, I actually got quite emotional.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, that you know, standing up for who they are and for our community in a field, you know, that is so important to the future of humanity and the planet, you know, this is what courage is about.
I agree. And I think, you know, honouring Scott Johnson and his memory and his work and the way in which they have. And to actually come out and tell the story that, yes, he did go to a beat and, yes, he was murdered, and to actually have to fight to have that story told.
And, you know, with science, visibility is reality.
It is about visibility, isn't it, Macca?
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.